So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review, man.
Right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and guess who? Wei Ting.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Ready, man.
Man, we're doing this from an apartment.
An abandoned apartment.
Yeah, we're going to go room by room.
Mm-hmm.
And the final door will be Chris Charlton.
Wow.
Yeah, he's hidden on the fourth floor.
On the roof, you mean?
Yes. The question is, will we have Chris Charlton or evil Chris Charlton?
Yeah, wow.
Maybe we'll get both. I hope you get the syringe out in case we need to bring him back to the side of good.
Okay. I got the water balloons.
I hope that's all you've got.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing?
Good. Guess what I just got?
Flu shot.
No.
Clean bill of health.
Hopefully, as a result of this.
Contacts.
No.
An iced coffee.
Yes, but no. I recently got my mouth guard.
Oh, wow. This is huge news.
Big
Review
news.
Away land.
Big news.
So was this a redo of your previous? You thought they kind of screwed it up the last time. Did it work out?
It actually worked out fine.
Oh, okay.
As you know, the night guards is what they're called.
Mm-hmm.
They only kind of, they don't require the full tooth impression. They just kind of require the bottom edging, right? Isn't that how? Is that how yours is?
Oh, mine's the everything.
Covers the whole thing?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Maybe I got ripped off. Mine is just like almost like a flat disc with a thin millimeter impression.
Okay.
Of it. We need to compare night guards.
Oh, mine's the same. Like it looks like a mouth guard that you would
for
wear
for jiu-jitsu?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it covers my entire mouth.
Can you like? Does it protrude? Is there like a little like lip that kind of protrudes into your lip, your
no.
human lip?
No.
Oh wow, interesting. Yeah. We have different night guards.
Very different.
Yeah.
So you've just got it. You have not tried it out yet.
I haven't tried it.
Oh man,
I'm try it tonight.
I'm so excited now to hear your review on Monday of how you sleep this weekend.
Do you have?
This is the most exciting podcast.
Are you supposed? Because with mine, they said that you should put it under hot water for like 30 seconds before you put it in each night.
No.
You just do it?
I just, you know, I'll like rinse it, but I don't put it under for any amount of time.
Okay. Interesting.
Wow. Well, this is great news for you.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
I just got my passport yesterday, Wei. My new passport.
That's great.
Yes.
But you know, you realize people actually enjoy hearing about this shit?
I argue that fact, but I'm told otherwise. On people.
Oh, there's a difference, though. On our podcasts, our podcast audience seems to not to mind this stuff. In fact, they seem to enjoy it. On YouTube,
F them.
They can't stand it when we talk about ourselves. They can't stand it when we talk about anything other than wrestling.
So shouldn't they not watch it then?
Well, they'll skip is what they'll do.
What do I care?
Yeah, you shouldn't.
Skip. YouTube gives you that option. So why am I supposed to feel bad for you?
I guess it's the act of having to seek out the thing rather than, you know, having being it instantaneously presented.
What a bunch of babies.
Well, I mean, I can relate, you know, when you're watching something versus listening to something. I think when you're watching, you kind of want more immediate gratification. You know what I mean? I've noticed too, like watching us speak versus just listening to us it's a lot more awkward to watch two people just talk in a room.
No, I don't get it at all. Why you would want to.
Yeah, listening.
But what's the complaint I get every single week? We throw the MMA report up on our YouTube page. Why isn't this video? Why can't I see you talking?
Right. It's
complaints every week.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, no, it's just, no, that's a lot more work. It's just another outlet for me to throw the show up on. It's like, why do you need to see me saying the exact same words, but you realize it's a human that these words are coming from?
Yeah,
the only difference.
I guess it's just I don't know. It's a human need to want to fully experience, you know, everything that the medium provides. But I mean, I do notice a difference even myself watching something versus listening to it. Like these pauses in our conversation, they feel a lot more natural when you're listening versus like when you're watching. When you're watching, it almost feels a little awkward. So I think like TV and like video is just a more fast-moving medium than, let's say, a podcast like this.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's on the viewer. They've got to adjust their expectations and what they want to get out of it. Because I'm too old to change. Did you hear about Chris Cornell?
Yes.
Crazy.
Very unfortunate.
52. Were you a Soundgarden fan?
I wouldn't say in particular, but I mean, I was a big fan of his voice. His voice is, I think
everyone was a fan of his voice.
I think legendary. Yeah.
I was never big into Soundgarden. I actually listened probably to more Audioslave than I did Soundgarden. I'm probably one of the few that would have that categorization, but crazy. 52.
I know. We're recording this
live.
Live.
The cause of death hasn't been reported. To my knowledge, yet.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Very unfortunate. He was a very talented young
I can't believe
guy.
He was only 52.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he
didn't look it.
Formed Soundgarden in the 80s.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this review is going to be a different one.
Okay.
Not an easy segue from Soundgarden to the DDT show in the apartment house.
Mm-hmm.
So later in the show, as I mentioned, we're going to be joined by the founder of Japanese Audio Wrestling, or one of the founders, Chris Charlton, who's going to give us a history lesson on DDT. He's also going to talk about this very unique event, if we can call it an event. This was a DVD released by DDT in August of 2011.
Was he the one who gave you this DVD?
He sent this to us years ago.
Ah.
Said, this is right up your alley. And I kind of tucked it away, and I mean, we've been given many things over the years, things that we have never gotten around to reviewing. This was one of them. And I don't know why, but after the House of Horrors match, I had this idea in my head where I was like, I know DDT did something like this. And then when I looked it up online, I saw the cover for it. It's like, wait a minute, I have that DVD. I know I do. And it was right here. It's been here in our studio every single week, just stacked here.
We've been looking at it.
We've literally been looking at it. So this stack probably has the best chance of being a breakout hit of a review. We've got XPW's first season here. We've got indie wrestling from Ontario.
What is that?
Stephanie McMahon and her workout video that Alex Greenfield sent to us.
How have we not reviewed that yet?
That's amazing. That's a video. That's a YouTube feature. Yeah. I can see that being video only for a workout. But nonetheless, today we are chatting about DDT. And I don't think we've ever reviewed DDT on this show.
I've never watched a DDT show. I've seen many DDT clips on the internet, but I've always wanted to fully experience the show. I don't know if this was necessarily indicative of a typical DDT show. I don't know if any of their shows are necessarily
I think this gives
typical.
You a good idea of the flavor of DDT and their unique approach, which this has been a very successful company. They just celebrated their 20th anniversary, legit 20th anniversary, because they launched in 1997, which would make it 20 years. And I mean, when you look at the talent pool, especially at this time in 2011, you had Kota Ibushi, who was at this time that this was taped, he was the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. He was going back and forth between New Japan and DDT, had won the best of the Super Juniors that year. So you could have him win the Super Juniors tournament and then go to Room 301 to defend his honor.
Wow. Wild.
And this was right before he had this pretty serious shoulder separation that was going to take him out for a while and have to vacate the junior heavyweight title. So, but 2011, you had Kenny Omega here. I mean, El Generico was working a lot with DDT. I mean, you had some incredible talent. And I think if you were to ask any of these guys who have certainly a creative flair for this industry, I'm sure DDT has help these performers in many ways, a different form of professional wrestling, and where you look at these guys now, like those three, you just isolate them.
I'm really surprised to hear that it's legitimately 20 years since this company began. Were they all, did they always have this kind of, more of a comedic philosophy?
No, I think that was more later on. And Chris will give a better history than, than I can about kind of where – I mean, this did not – the comedy stuff doesn't dominate DDT, but it's certainly an element of their shows. It has been for a while. That's set them apart, but also having really good wrestlers as well. It's kind of this weird mixture that has – and as much – the show is as much a part of the audience as it is the performers in the ring.
Yeah, and I feel like now more than ever, North American audiences are more than ready now for – a company like this that pushes the boundaries of what professional wrestling can be.
Yeah. So I guess how would you this was pretty much handheld style for the entire thing. It was
like a one-shot thing, the entire video.
Yeah. It was the Kota Ibushi project.
It was multi-camera, though.
Yeah. This was, you know, a full-on production by DDT. And all these Kota Ibushi shows up at this apartment, which – the story is that the apartment has been condemned, and now Kota Ibushi is going to go through this apartment and have wrestling matches, quote unquote, with the different occupants in the various rooms, all of which are members of the DDT roster.
Right. And he is to wrestle each member, starting from the bottom floor all the way to the top, in order to receive keys to get to the next room.
This is a total video game.
Yeah,
come to
completely,
life. Like, completely. I'm surprised they didn't try and develop the DDT apartment game.
Are you really surprised?
They didn't?
You think DDT would have the financial backing to create a video game?
Oh, I'm just saying they could possibly have gotten a deal to try and push this.
Please.
Dude, TNA got a video game.
I imagine TNA to be a little bigger than DDT, at least financially.
Today, I wouldn't say that.
Okay, I don't think TNA would get a video game deal today.
Well, they didn't get a video game deal in 2011 coming out of this, but I thought this was a real life video game.
That is certainly the influence and the premise, yes.
So there's these two fans at the entrance to introduce Kota Ibushi. I did love how everyone was also in their trunks and tights throughout this.
Yeah.
We had that uniformity to tie everybody together.
I think that's part of kind of, again, the comedic aspect of it is, you know, like wrestlers really are – they're kind of superheroes come to life. And as a superhero, you have to be in uniform. And I think there's always something really interesting and funny about seeing a wrestler dressed like a wrestler in their tights in a public setting, you know?
It's like when John Cena, he doesn't do it as much now, but used to do all of his big interviews, like even mainstream outlets, in his wrestling attire, like right. His jorts and shirt. And he looked ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And this even more so. But all of these fans surrounding – these were all contest winners that got to come on location for the filming of this.
Oh, wow.
Quite the array of fans as well.
There were fans that followed Ibushi along with the camera crew from room to room. And I thought this was an integral part of the production because wrestling really requires an audience. Much like podcasting on YouTube requires video, wrestling can be very awkward without an audience reaction to emphasize the moves. And
because if there's one thing they didn't want out of this was awkwardness.
That's right. Yes. But certainly this audience being around this these quote unquote matches in the various rooms certainly helped add a bit of atmosphere.
So we follow Kota Ibushi to the first room, room 103.
Mm-hmm.
And his opponent was Baten Tamagawa, who was decked out in USA-inspired trunks and a shirt with his sunglasses. And this looked like a storage room just with garbage and empty boxes.
I think it was an actual bedroom.
Well, it looked like shit.
Those are the sizes.
Maybe he was packing. Maybe he knew this apartment's getting bulldozed and he's got to get out of there.
But Japanese apartments are not very large.
Yes, he had to batten down the hatches, as they say.
Oh, yes.
There were all these photographers behind Ibushi, and so Ibushi just attacks him and throws him through this door panel.
You didn't mention what he was doing as Ibushi walked into the room.
What was he doing?
He was masturbating.
How did I miss this?
I don't know. I don't know how you missed it.
I was busy trying to look up, I think, who this guy was.
Kota Ibushi opens the door and catches Baten Tamagawa masturbating, and really sets the tone.
It sets the tone, and was hardly the biggest takeaway of this entire apartment complex and what was being done behind closed doors.
What I love was that immediately once Ibushi attacks him, we get the sound of a ring bell and a graphic, at least the text of a graphic, indicating Kota Ibushi versus Baten Tamagawa.
Wait a minute. You got a graphic?
Yeah, or at least a little lower third indicating the match. You didn't see that?
I watched the DVD, and I don't think I did, because I had no clue who this guy was.
Oh, it listed all the names. And
are you kidding me?
And the room number.
God damn.
I mean, it was in Japanese, but like it did list them.
I'm 99% sure these graphics were not on the DVD.
Oh, interesting. When I say graphics, let's not get carried away.
Listen, if they identified – listen, there were a number of these guys that I didn't know who they were, that I was frantically trying to figure out the identities of
some
of these
people. I still have to do some research to find the translations, but it did list the names.
Yes, this masturbator was some of the most research I had to do. So, anyway, so we saw a low blow to Ibushi. They start singing and dancing as Ibushi's on the floor, and then Ibushi just knocks him down. I feel very silly running this down with the holds, but pinned him with a jackknife cover in about a minute.
One of the big – yeah, and then you got another graphic afterwards indicating the match time.
Okay, this DVD sucks. What?
I'm sorry.
I wonder what – because you watched this online. I wonder what the source of that online file was, if not the DVD.
I assume that there must have been multiple – like in my research, I discovered that this is a cult favorite, I suppose, since it's been produced. And I assume that maybe there have been multiple iterations of this floating around. I'm not sure. But one of the high spots of this match, this first match, if you can call it that, was Tamagawa Irish whips, Tamagawa is Irish whipped into the door. In the door, I guess being, I don't know, like a really cheap, brittle wooden Japanese door just shatters.
Yes.
And everybody panics. And Ibushi's first concern is more so the door and probably how much damage he's inflicted on this poor, poor building than actually carrying on with the match. It was amusing.
So that means he got to move on to level number 2, which was room 105. So we were staying on the same floor with Shigehiro Irai, who is in a ball gag getting whipped by a dominatrix.
Yeah, he's sitting on a wooden horse.
Which I'm sure is very popular amongst this lifestyle.
A wooden horse? I guess. I don't know.
He attacks Ibushi while still gagged and then had enough awareness to use a snap mare to Ibushi while the dominatrix is still whipping him. And then he attacks the neck of Ibushi. Ibushi comes off his shoulders and hits a head kick.
Yes. So I suppose the gimmick is much like how Hulk Hogan, when he needs it, he is able to hulk up using almost the attacks of his opponent to motivate him, and it gives him strength. Much like how Hulk Hogan hulks up, Irie is able to gain strength with the whips of his dominatrix.
Yes. He was able to draw power here. And Ibushi, after the head kick, the woman starts whipping Ibushi. And then he attacks her with kicks, takes the whip, and he starts whipping Urai, which I don't know if that would have the same effect on him or not.
I don't know.
Like, is this pleasure coming from the whipping, or is it the source of the whip?
I admit it would have to depend on his mentality at the time. It would also depend on what he's into and how he, I don't know, how he finds Kota Ibushi.
Yes. So then, of course, a figure four was applied. While now he's still whipping Urai here, and then she goes back to whipping him with the figure four still applied, and then she takes hot candle wax and starts dripping it onto the chest of Urai, and he passes out as this physician who is along for the crowd that is following Ibushi goes to resuscitate Urai, and we never did get an update on whether or not this man's heart stopped.
We don't know if he passed out from pain or from pleasure or both.
It could have been some form of autoerotic asphyxiation, maybe.
Yeah, asphyxiation.
Asphyxiation.
But either way, the match ends. We get the ring bell. And a total time was also indicated too.
Hot candle wax, yeah. Not something utilized all that often. And that's something that, to me, is something that could be incorporated into many of these style of hardcore matches.
Hot candle wax. Yeah, definitely. Sure.
How did you think the dominatrix performed?
I think she did her job well. I don't know, whipped pretty well and looked the part.
I wonder if the candle wax was part of the deal or whether she just improvised here.
Oh, I don't know. Like, I'm not sure. I lost it when when she started dripping the candle wax. By the way, I watched this whole show in a cafe on a Saturday afternoon.
That's your fault.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of knew what I was getting into, but
you said you watched this in a corner. This didn't.
I mean, there were certain people behind me, but I mean, hopefully they weren't looking. Anyway, but I didn't know that
they might have asked you to leave if they saw.
I don't. Yeah, I mean, it's Toronto, like it's a pretty liberal town, but I didn't realize how like sexual this whole DVD was. I thought it'd just be like weird, like creepy stuff. I didn't realize that it was going to be so like sexually fetishized, you know. And but I just lost it. Like I laughed so hard and when I saw this candle wax that this dominatrix pulled out and started dripping on
the genius of this here. Of this event is that this can find a whole different audience beyond wrestling.
Sure,
possible.
Yeah. I don't think the intent is ever to have a good wrestling match in the traditional sense, you know? Again, this seemed largely to be – obviously, it was all kind of played for comedy. And yeah, it was fascinating. It was fascinating.
Then we're going to go up a level to room 205. And there's mail in the slot as Kota goes to unlock the door and walks in on – Tanamusaku Toba, who is caught with porn all over his walls, and somebody is in the closet who is frantically trying to disguise himself and not be seen.
Toba's whole gimmick is that he's like a Muay Thai guy, so he even takes the time to lace up his gloves.
And the person inside the closet was Michael Nakazawa, who would have a big part, I would say.
Yeah, Michael Nakazawa is essentially rescued by Kota Ibushi. He too is bagged gagged and bound.
Yeah.
And
This is minimum of felony.
Unless it was voluntary.
Well, I thought the whole point here was that he's being held against his will. possibly with a guy that you could,
we don't know that.
You could consider his hands to be weapons.
Yeah, sure.
So he puts on the boxing gloves and attacks, but misses. Nakazawa gets out. His hands are tied. I think another clue that he may have been kidnapped here under duress. Toba then blasts Kota with these punches and kicks. There was no working strikes here.
They were definitely very stiff strikes.
Holy shit, dude.
Mm-hmm.
This is harder than you hit me in practice.
Oh, please.
Just this crazy striking exchange, and Ibushi drops him with a left hand and gets a two count. And Toba was throwing everything with these punches. He took some slaps. Finally, Toba gets dropped with one strike, and Kota gets the win. And they do this shot of Toba with his eyes wide open. He might be dead.
Mm-hmm.
This was like the most physically intense interaction. Like, we got crazy hardcore shit later, but in terms of just sheer violence in a small window, this to me was my pick.
Maybe the stiffest strikes I've seen ever in an apartment match.
This was Brawl for All.
Yeah. This was about 1:03.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Very good. This was my breaking point of what I time and what I don't time.
Yeah. No, it did list on the graphic.
There is absolutely nothing to the story of the match that time will be able to assist with.
So he rescues Nakazawa and grabs the next key.
Yes. So we had Sonic and Tails.
I guess.
Just to follow him. Like, this was such a video game. Mm-hmm. It was such a
Definitely.
Video game.
Yeah.
Are you ready, Wei?
By the way, we're only 15 minutes into this video.
Yes, we will talk about that later. This is an 80-minute game.
Yeah.
Room 302. And this was where we were... Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself.
No, 302.
You know, I'm at 302, but the one that I was expecting is 301. That's
right.
The big room. So... Who were these guys in the ring? Did you have the idea?
This was Ken Oka.
This was Ken Oka, yeah. Yes. And so Ken Oka is there with his hair tied back in this room, and this argument ensues between him and this group. And Nakazawa appears to step in and gives Kota Ibushi a bit of a rest here. So this was more Nakazawa...
Yeah, so
I think
Ibushi was, injured as a result of the last battle, fighting Toba. So Nakazawa,
he may have had a concussion legit here. So why don't you take this room off?
Yeah, so Nakazawa, who was recently rescued, says, "Kota, sit this one out. I'll fight this one for you." And this was, of course, our water fight.
There were buckets of water from an apparent water leak in this piece of shit apartment. And they start throwing water balloons at one another. Nakazawa is dunked into a cooler full of water.
Oh, this match was fucking amazing.
I love the idea that this is also like disgusting rainwater as well, as opposed to like...
Was it disgusting rainwater?
I guess that was the impression they were giving is that it was from the leaks.
I thought it was just water. And I thought this dude had like some water fetish. But they start selling for the water.
Of course.
Like
the natural elements.
It was so funny. Like these, they would like take the buckets and like throw them on each other, and they would act like they were like just hit with like a giant dropkick or something.
When the Super Soaker was brought out, that was my highlight of this room. There's a Super Soaker attack, and then Nakazawa dumps a bucket of water onto him, spits water into his eyes. And then puts the bucket on his head and super kicks him and gets what I would call a waterfall near fall.
Oh, boy.
With the super kick to the bucket. Then a whole cooler gets dumped on the dude by Nakazawa. He still kicks out Wei.
I
don't know why, but they totally – my belief was so suspended that I actually reacted to the near fall. Like, this water didn't keep him down.
Me too.
They brought me into the story of this.
Okay, exactly. Like, in pro wrestling, if you can convince me that something looks like it hurts, I will buy it, as long as you're consistent. And here they started...
Even if there's no logic behind
it. Yeah, here they started off with tiny pails of water. Then they escalated to the water balloons. Now you're teasing me with a giant cooler full of water. And if you're acting like you're resisting and don't want to be hit, and the moment you do get hit with this water, you act like you die from it, I'm going to buy into that near fall. I thought they should have saved this for the finish.
It's one of the things about water. You can't live without it, but too much of it will kill you.
Sure.
So the whole cooler then, yeah, was dumped on him, and Nakazawa, he kicks out. Then the two sit down cross-legged across from one another in the water.
Did Chris mention what they might have been talking about? Like, they just all of a sudden stop the fight and just decide to sit down cross-legged to have a conversation.
I don't know what was said here. But Kota Ibushi then returned with firecrackers.
Roman candles.
Roman candles.
Yeah, Final Deletion style.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. I wonder if that was an influence. I don't know.
It could very well fit within the same genre, I'll say. This whole video and the Final Deletion.
He lights them and starts shooting them off in this room that quickly fills up with smoke. And finally uses his firecracker. And Ibushi ends up getting the pin in this. What a throwback to the smoke-filled arena here. And the camera shot is all messed up and pixelated on the DVD version as Kota gets the win here over Ken Oka.
This
and Nakazawa does all the heavy lifting in this one.
Yeah, 4 minutes and 12 seconds.
Wow.
Smoke just filled this entire room. And
this looked dangerous.
Yeah. Like,
fuck, you can't have a barbecue inside of an apartment. I don't think firecrackers are welcome either.
I mean, I would at least hope the electricity was turned off in the building for this water fight.
God, that could have been the climax. The thing explodes.
Wow. Yeah.
Gas leak.
And Ibushi grabs the next key as we move on upstairs.
This is where we go to room number 301.
Oh, boy. Oh, not even upstairs, the next room.
It was one over. Mm. So there were fireworks going on in here, too.
Yeah.
This is where we run into Dan Shokodino, who is one of the stars of DDT to this day, who is engaging in sexual activity with Hikaru Fukuda, Trans Am Fukuda.
Yeah. I think it's Hiroshi.
Is it Hiroshi?
Yeah.
Hiroshi Fukuda. They stop because they are – how would you describe the start of this way?
They're having sex.
Is this simulated sex?
Well, with they had their tights on, so I would assume so. Yes.
So Dino attacks Nakazawa, who – I mean, this is a very personal act that these two are just barging in on. So, I mean, this is kind of healing Ibushi.
I kind of want to know – I mean, I wish I knew the – like the actual reason why they're going into all these rooms. Like why would they need to disrupt these two?
Just two private citizens having consensual sex. Dino pulls Nakazawa's trunks down and decides – for obstructing our privacy, he is going to rape him.
And we get a tag team match.
We get a tag team match where apparently it is...
Oh, boy.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The fucking Fukuda delivers a fisherman buster through a wall.
This was crazy. This was actually the most dangerous spot in the whole thing.
This
was a legit fisherman buster, like in a doorway, okay? And all the while.
Which, to my knowledge, the separated shoulder Kota Ibushi suffered was not during this, but I can't completely rule that out. It was only a few weeks after this that Ibushi had a separated shoulder, and I watched this, and I'm wondering if this all led to him having to vacate his fucking New Japan championship.
Yeah. So New Japan's like, Kota, how did you injure yourself? What? I took a fisherman buster in an apartment match while Michael Nakazawa was being raped by Don Shokodino in the next room.
Because
that's how they cut from the fisherman buster over to the next shot, and it's like Dino like raping Michael Nakazawa. I have nothing else to say.
Me and Chris have a long discussion on Dan Shokodino, and Chris has a really deep philosophical look at this character towards Japanese culture. So
interesting.
You'll want to hear about that.
I mean, okay, there's something to be said. Like, it is really interesting Because like something like that would get so many complaints in North America.
Oh, that's what I bring up in with Chris.
Right. Okay. So I, I look forward to your discussion.
So anyway, Nakazawa then gets thrown through a wall. Ibushi clotheslines Fukuda and he nails him into the wall, lifts him up for a last ride where his head just gets drilled into this low ceiling.
This was hilarious.
Holy shit. He hits the last ride. Ibushi pins him and he and Fukuda is out cold and just left for dead as Nakazawa hands Ibushi the key.
And is this building made out of paper or something? Like how does that break the ceiling that easily?
Drywall.
I guess.
This was the most dangerous.
That last ride was so funny. Like, I mean, the last ride is one of Ibushi's moves.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know.
Way worse in an apartment.
I don't know if they planned this with the low ceiling of the apartment, but, like, seeing him get this guy up for a last ride and with the lift, his head going through the ceiling.
You
was...
can't watch a normal last ride because it's like it doesn't look the same unless there's a ceiling to drive him into.
This was amazing. Yes.
Room 301. It's probably the part of the event that is most
the most controversial discussed. Match, yes. 314, the pinfall.
Room 403. Ibushi is back on his own now, though Nakazawa would make his return later. Ibushi peeks into the mail slot, and we hear this guy with a really hoarse voice revealing himself as Tsuyoshi Kikuchi, who is reading a magazine, just hanging out in his room, with his small garden of fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, he's got a makeshift vegetable farm in his room.
Ibushi.
Nothing unusual about that.
Not at all. And Kikuchi is in his tights, which is even better. Kikuchi was one of my highlights of this entire thing.
I remember this guy from doing the Noah shows. And I guess, you know, at this stage of his career, he seems to play like kind of like an older, grizzled, grumpy old man. And seeing him act here, even though I didn't know what he was saying, was very entertaining.
He was all in on this.
Yeah.
It was so apparent. I mean, this guy, All Japan, Noah, and now kind of near the ending of his career, making it into the apartment. So Ibushi is fed a cucumber by Kikuchi, and the entourage here is like, they just seemed in a weird spot here as they're like eavesdropping here on this weird exchange.
They're doing a whole lot of talking.
Yeah.
And Kikuchi has got a mouthful of cucumber trying to talk, delaying this match.
So they bring a table out and they're going to settle this with an arm wrestling contest where Ibushi quickly wins the arm wrestling contest.
This was like a best of three.
Yes. Right. And did it. Super quick, which in arm wrestling they refer to as flashing, which would be our second room that we got a flashing.
Right, yes.
Next, they stand back to back. Kikuchi, like, hits him with his ass, sending Ibushi into the wall.
This must have been some type of Japanese play schoolyard game. Because, like, yeah, they're standing back to back. And then, like, I don't even know what the goal was, but, like... Kikuchi basically won by doing a thump, like a rear view, before Ibushi could.
So now we were tied in our mini Olympics.
Uh-huh.
And, they set up a tarp over the floor. Kikuchi gets a watermelon, sets it on the tarp.
Did you have any idea what was going on?
Not a fucking clue, Wei! Not a goddamn clue. He then proceeds to get a lead pipe. And a scarf.
So I gathered that they were setting up some type of pinata thing with the watermelon.
He blindfolds himself, gets spun around while holding the pipe. Uh-huh. What could possibly go wrong here? The crowd guides him towards the watermelon and he misses on the first swing, then breaks it on the second. And Ibushi attacks him with another vegetable, puts the broken watermelon into his face, breaking it, and pins Kikuchi. This seemed really unfair for Kikuchi, who was blindfolded here.
Yeah, he should really take this to the commission.
This just seemed, I felt bad for Kikuchi here.
Yeah.
I was entertained by this.
Yeah, if only by the acting of Tsuyoshi Kikuchi.
He made this.
Who was like, who seemed the least likely candidate for a match like this, but was very entertaining and very funny. But I would say in terms of technique, maybe the weakest of the matches.
Did you get a time on this?
1:12.
Oh, the yeah. quick.
Yeah.
Then we go to room 502. This was a big one. This was Kota Ibushi running into the Brahmins. Mm-hmm. Brahmin Kai and Brahmin Shu,
mm-hmm.
who are both wearing ponchos with blood splatter on them.
Yeah. They're twins.
They're twins, and Ibushi is eating the watermelon from the last match. I mean, he beat the man with the watermelon and then stole it as
he
well.
He fucking ruined his garden.
The Brahmins here have skullets, and part of the group of fans that are watching this includes a young child. And one of the Brahmins addresses the child. Chris Charlton did translate this for me.
Mm-hmm.
And said, "You better watch out for my brother. He's a pedophile."
Wow.
That seemed really creepy. This is a real child.
Fitting with the rest of the show, I guess.
The bell then rings for this handicap match. And we actually got technical wrestling here at the start as Ibushi got placed in a rear chin lock. And then we got a test of strength.
It was the most legit wrestling we saw up until this point.
There was an eye rake to Ibushi, some Kawada kicks, and then Ibushi hit a spinning head kick and lifted him up. But then the other Brahmin broke these eggs into Ibushi's face and then continued tossing eggs at Ibushi as they go all over the wall. And then, of course, after you egg a man, you pour ketchup all over him.
This turned into a food fight.
Yeah, a very intense one. They pull Ibushi into this fan where the blades are exposed.
A table fan, yes.
Yeah. And then they fight into a shower and they squeeze shampoo into his hair like bullies. Like, "Oh, you're all dirty. Let's clean you up." Like these shitheads.
Shampoo.
They start cleaning them with shampoo.
How awful.
So then one of the Brahmins, I can't decipher the two, drank this black shit. What was this?
I don't know.
Was like black ink or some shit. I hope it wasn't. But knowing how stupid like some of the stuff was in this, it wouldn't have surprised me if they put fucking gasoline or oil in their goddamn mouth.
No, this was like, I think again, like another like probably more common household Japanese item. It looked like some type of medicine or something.
Yeah, this was strange. It was just black shit, and so the guy puts it in his mouth to spit out. Ibushi shuts his mouth and forces him to swallow it, which is like right out of a fucking cartoon.
Yeah. So, like, what I want to know is, did they plan all these spots at the beginning of the apartment match and said, "Okay, I'm gonna go up here. There's a lot to remember
if you're Ibushi.
You're gonna try to miss me with this black shit, and I'm gonna cover your mouth, and you're gonna swallow it." Okay.
So then this black mist went all over the wall, which was way more visually impressive than Roman Reigns hurling blood over the white wall at Payback.
Mm.
Remember after the ambulance match, or not the ambulance match, but when they were back by the ambulance, Ibushi is just covered in all this shit. So then they pour flour on him.
Yeah.
Ibushi fights back. He kicks both. He hit a standing moonsault and then a running power slam to the leather couch. And the other Brahmin then breaks the cover with a container of tennis balls. One of the Brahmins nearly slips and tears his ACL. Then they use the black mist again. And one of them misses it, hitting the other Brahmin. So Ibushi, in all of this, hits a Pele kick and then does a nip up and a bridging German for the pin.
A really impressive deadlift German to pin Shu at, I believe it was Shu that he pinned, at 9:10. I can only imagine what somebody who hasn't watched the show and is only listening to your description of this match must be thinking at this very moment. He broke up a pin with a bucket full of tennis balls.
I'm not wrong.
Nope. It was a very accurate description of what occurred. Yeah.
So, the one Brahmin with the white dress shirt then vomits up this green ooze, utters a statement, and then passes out. The shirtless one then cuts a promo. He passes out on the floor. Ibushi just turns to leave and cleans himself off in the sink.
They've both been poisoned by this black stuff, I suppose.
I guess so. They have expired. Out to the balcony.
So what's next? I mean, this is the top level.
We now face the boss, who is the evil Michael Nakazawa, who has been placed under the influence of evil.
Yeah, so does he have some type of like Jekyll and Hyde gimmick, or how did he turn evil?
He was put under a spell, I guess, somehow in this apartment.
Maybe by Don Cicadino.
He might have been, yes. And he has taken the physician that we met earlier hostage.
The doctor, yes.
The doctor.
Yes.
So Ibushi's on the ground. This guy's being held by his throat, and the bell rings, and Ibushi tries to pry the man free, and Nakazawa takes the doctor and uses his hand to slap Ibushi.
It was weird. It was almost like so Nakazawa was holding the doctor hostage, but like it was almost like he was almost puppeteering the doctor.
Yeah.
So like Ibushi had to almost have the match with the doctor, with Nakazawa guiding the doctor's movements. Very complicated.
After Ibushi got crotched on this metal pole, Nakazawa hit him with a pole, hit the pole with a pipe so that it rang through his body.
Very innovative.
This is actually a few weeks ago this happened to me playing baseball, where I hit the ball with my bat and didn't have a tight enough grip, so my fingers felt like I broke them.
Oh, so you know exactly what...
Oh, this would have killed.
Kota Ibushi was...
Imagine that happening to your testicles. So the match continues here. Nakazawa misses and runs into a fence, gets kicked in the chest, and then Ibushi does this moonsault off the steps to the top of the roof. They battle by this wooden fence. Nakazawa does his front suplex, gets a two count. They do standing reversals, another low blow, and a cradle by Nakazawa. Calls for a super kick. It's blocked. He's tripped by Ibushi, who places him on his shoulders and then lawn darts him into this wooden fence. Went in at quite a high rate of speed. And this leads to the pinfall. And Kota Ibushi has won the apartment navigation.
Yes, he defeats evil Michael Nakazawa.
But they still have to bring Nakazawa back to the side of good. And that requires the physician to snap him out of this by injecting him with a needle. Legit.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's bleeding from this. Like they stuck a goddamn syringe in this guy.
Yeah.
Well, this did not look like the most sanitized environment either.
Yeah. And then Nakazawa snaps out of it. And he's like, oh.
So then they do what all anyone could possibly do here. They all cheer and dance. Everyone gives a round of applause for this feat of insanity. The camera then scans everyone who's awkwardly quiet at, what do we do now? And we get reflections on the two kids who were the guides throughout this, the Bill and Ted of this tour. Ibushi then exits the apartment to cheers. Apparently the same people, they waited outside for like the entire hour this went on. And they, I guess, assume that success was found by Kota Ibushi.
I think it was just the same group of people that happened to be go downstairs before Ibushi did.
Well, then in a underrated part of this was the accordion montage of highlights to end this and going through all the participants.
I mean, it really felt like a video game ending, you know, the same way like a video game would end and you would get the credit roll with like, you know, sappy music.
Yeah.
It felt just like that. And I'm, you know, again, that was certainly the influence behind this entire video. If you're coming here to watch a great Kota Ibushi wrestling match, you don't know how to live. This had all the fun of a group of friends just getting together to make stupid videos.
This feels like it would have been the peak of the SWC.
SMC.
Sorry.
You know what? If we could have continued, we maybe would have one day gotten to this level. But this had all the fun of, like, you know, just friends hanging out, shooting a shitty video on their handy cam with no intention of ever showing anybody this video. But this was
DDT. I had every intention of showing this to everybody. Yeah.
And now, instead of, like, having backyard wrestlers that were your friends, they had one of the best wrestlers in the world actually participate in this. And it tells you a whole lot about Kota Ibushi. You know, this guy who is so good at traditional wrestling, yet, you know, is willing to do crazy shit just to, I don't know, for the artistry of what professional wrestling might be. Puts on the, you know, tiger mask and has prelim matches instead of, you know, possibly main eventing shows.
And a guy that's turned down contracts with New Japan and WWE.
In order to do this.
In order to just have his freedom.
Yeah.
And not be on anyone's schedule. And instead of being a headliner in New Japan, he wants to preserve his body and he's wrestling under a mask.
Yeah. And he's taking Fisherman Busters and Kitchens. Again, like, he does not seem like anybody who is driven by money at all. He seems to be driven by creativity. And I think DDT certainly is a perfect forum for a guy like that. And, I mean, as a wrestling fan, I'm grateful that shit like this exists.
What did you think of – I felt this was a little long. At 80 minutes, I think it was – maybe could have been condensed a little bit.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously.
I know. I mean, I don't disagree. I just find it, like, hilarious to even try to judge this.
Well, did this hold your interest for the entire time?
There was.
Because it lost me at times.
I'll tell you, there was certainly a time, like, at least, like, certainly 15 minutes in where we're three matches in. The matches were, like, 90 seconds each where I was like, how much more can this hold up? And I felt it then. But then, like, you get to some of the more outrageous stuff, and I would say overall, you know, it wasn't so bad. I liked the narrative of going through the individual floors, you know, going from place to place. I wish I understood what they were saying more, because I'm sure the motivation would have been spelled out a little bit better.
Do you think that, I don't want to say a serious version of this, but almost more of like a haunted house kind of vibe could have worked for House of Horrors, where it's Randy Orton going into this haunted house where you'd have
Harper maybe, and then like
you'd have different effects. You've had
100%.
Like you, House of Horrors. I'm not saying that it necessarily would have gotten any higher praise, but there was a lot of creativity that was missed on that.
I agree.
They went the laziest route possible, and I think that is where people had the biggest. I think Jerry Lawler summarized it. He was really let down because he's a massive horror fan and he was really looking forward to the WWE production of doing something like a haunted house. Mm. And this was played for comedy. The WWE version could have been played for spookiness and just.
I agree.
You could have gotten something more out of it, and I felt they just had no great idea.
Yeah, I think House of Horrors was missing a narrative like this had. You know, House of Horrors was basically show up at a place that's decorated with a bunch of scary-looking shit and then battle out of it and continue the match at the arena. So this, though, as ridiculous as all the matches were, you had a sense of progression, and every room had its own kind of unique flavor, okay, like to put it mildly. And, you know, just exactly like a video game. You start from the bottom level and you progress all the way to the top where you even got a twist at the end. His friend happens to be behind this entire thing as an evil in version of his friend. House of Horrors was certainly missing something like that. And I mean, I feel like even the House of Horrors could have been, you could have dialed in the comedy a little bit. I feel like what makes the Final Deletion work is the fact that it doesn't take itself seriously. And, you know, it's fun. It's wrestling, you know, it's tough to make something like this legitimately scary. Maybe for kids, you can get away with it, but for the adults watching, you have to have fun with it.
And you also have to have that relationship with your audience where they will allow you to go in that direction, which a DDT, it's not as though they were just doing serious wrestling from the get-go and out of nowhere they decided to do this. Whereas the WWE, I think they have not they're not granted that same latitude because they've never tried to portray themselves like that to their audience. So that when you do something like that, it's very much seen as trying to capitalize on what's worked elsewhere.
Sure.
And yeah. There was no charm. There was no "we're in on the joke with you" that House of Horrors was able to get. That Final Deletion did, for
but
instance.
But I think now, though, I mean, at least in North America, with the precedent that the Final Deletion has set, I think audiences were craving something like the Final Deletion with that level of creativity, you know?
I think the Orton angle showed you that there was – people didn't dismiss it outright mm-hmm. until it got into the, yeah. that kind of territory. I mean, I think people were willing to give them, you know, some creative license to go in that direction, whereas
yeah. –
we've seen in the past with the Kane character, for instance, they hadn't been so willing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But, you know, even talking about the Final Deletion, there was something to be entertained by, you know, every minute, every 30 seconds, you know? They find the well, and then the well is – what do they call it? The well of like
– the Fountain of Youth?
The Fountain of Youth, you know? Like that was interesting. And, like the House of Horrors though was just them going from room to room. It might as well have been your typical backstage blunder match.
Yeah.
There's no any type of twist or anything like that made you kind of –
there were dolls hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah. It was lame.
I don't know how you judge this way, but of your enjoyment level –
well, and I think you make a great point. Like if the WWE just all of a sudden did this match, we'd all be shitting on it. It would be laughable.
We'd
be joking about it.
You haven't so, you know, it's like you have to condition your audience so mm-hmm. that they will accept something like that. DDT has done that.
Yeah.
They will accept things that are way outside the box because they expect that mm-hmm. out of DDT.
Shikara could do something like this. If this happened in ROH, I don't know how your audiences would react.
That would be something.
Yeah.
Matt Taven going through an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
I give this a – I'm going to go 6.5 out of 10. Okay. I didn't think this was the wild, oh my God, you've got to see this kind of event or cult classic. There were parts I was entertained by. So that's my thought.
That's fair. Totally. This was so different from anything I'd seen previous in professional wrestling that I was very interested to see more from DDT coming out of it. And I think the idea that somebody like a Kota Ibushi seemed to take this completely seriously, didn't break character nor crack a smile in the entire production of this, wrestled and did all his moves as if this was, you know, might as well have been the Tokyo Dome. I love that. I found it very entertaining, and it was like a real glimpse into not just the promotion, but I think like the sensibility and the sense of humor of like Japanese culture that you would incorporate so much like sex and I don't know, weird water balloon shit into a video game inspired professional wrestling match. I found it really fascinating. I give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean it's weird. It's not as though these were – you can't really necessarily judge this on like the
– no.
The wrestling part. But nonetheless, this was still Kota Ibushi having to perform for like 80 minutes. Mm-hmm. And let's assume that these were all like one-take shots to go through all of this. I mean you're going through all this different – like you're essentially improving a feature-length film.
Yes.
Like you're going from scene to scene to scene to scene.
Yeah, it's 80 minutes, yes.
And you've got to keep rolling and mm-hmm. just go with all of this. I mean, there might have been some downtime in between rooms and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. it's, you know, I thought Kota Ibushi was the perfect guy to have as your 100%. Kind of key figure.
Yeah.
All right. We're now going to hear from Chris Charlton, formerly of Japanese Audio Wrestling. And we discussed this event, the history of DDT, and a lot of other topics. So here he is, Chris Charlton on Review Away.
Myself and Mr. Ting, we have taken a look at the very unique DDT event that we have just chatted about. And now joining us, I like to call him the founder of Japanese Audio Wrestling, a show you can still hear with JoJo Remy here at Live Audio Wrestling. Chris Charlton joins us late on a Friday night in Japan. How are you, Chris?
Good evening. I'm very well.
I had to pull you back in here because this DDT review, there are a few people I associate with DDT quite like yourself. In fact, you're at the top of my list. And
really? Yes. That's, yeah.
Yeah, you are also the one that provided myself and Wei with this DVD years ago, that we only have gotten around to reviewing now. So this was quite the event, and I'm honored that you thought so kindly to send this DVD to both of us.
Yeah, God, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, you sent me this email out of the blue of like, oh, we're finally looking at this. And I'm like, oh, Christ, I had to rack my brain of what did I? And yeah, I think it was like about 4 years ago.
That probably.
I sent you that DVD. But certainly, yes, in the spirit of, oh, this would be a thing that John and Wei would not like necessarily, but tolerate and make entertainment on.
Well, we're going to chat about the Kota Ibushi's battle through the abandoned apartment, but just because I imagine a lot of listeners maybe are not super familiar with DDT, when did they first come upon your radar, and can you kind of just outline how DDT got to this point where they've occupied a certain space in the market in Japan that not a whole lot of other promotions are necessarily catering to with the level of popularity DDT does?
Yeah, so DDT, they just went past the 20th anniversary this year, and so they were formed in 1997 by this guy Sanshiro Takagi, who honestly at the time I'm not completely sure of like the initial stages of DDT. I'm sure there are people like Jamie over at Dramatic DDT who would correct me, but the vision, as I understand it, or Takagi's vision initially, was for this to be kind of following in UWFI's footsteps, that it was going to be a very straight-laced sort of martial arts influenced promotion.
I love that you can't keep a straight face even giving this description.
I mean, like, you kind of see it with, you know, I mean, you have guys like Yukio Sakaguchi there, you know, working still now, you know, and he's had that background. But I mean, like, yeah, absolutely. That was the initial sort of idea in Takagi's head. And he quickly realized that they were going to be absolutely sort of butchered and not make any headway. Especially, I think, if you look at 1997, that was when I would say, like, the big boom had just sort of finished. You know, I think like 96 was really when New Japan were doing dome tours, you know, and when that UWFI angle was really, really hot.
And remember, that's the same year, Chris, that Pride launched. So, I mean, while that was certainly, and the next number of years, I mean, that kind of shoot style promotion was very much in vogue.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, you're on that thing where MMA is on the rise. Pro wrestling's like starting to fall off a little bit, and so like there's that middle ground that UWFI was sitting in was squeezed out. You know, it's like this neither fish nor fowl thing. And so like I mean, like that's when everything started to take a turn, I suppose, for the more bizarre. DDT first came to my attention. God, I'm not really sure. I think I was going to a lot of, Shinkiba shows, cause, you know, we were talking just before we came on about our various, home lives and families and stuff, you know, but I used to go to a lot more shows, especially like in Shinkiba, in that sort of, Japanese indie grime, sort of feel. So I used to, a lot of my friends work for, Triple Six, which was Men's Teo's promotion, which was a very, like, that's DDT times 1,000. Very, very, very strange. And, DDT would run Shinkiba a lot. They still do, first ring. And, I just sort of came across, I'd heard of them. But I started getting into them because they'd have, beer fight shows. They call them beer fight shows, which is like a 1 week, run they do every summer. and their beer garden affairs. So like you go there, it only costs 500 yen. So like $5 to watch the show. And they basically get their money by selling you booze in between the matches. And like having barbecue cookouts like in between. So like the wrestlers will come and drink a beer with you or whatever. And so yeah, this was like cheap, awesome wrestling, you know, and I was familiar with sort of Kenny, Omega at the time as well. So, you know, I met him there and chatted with him and stuff. And like it was just a very, positive atmosphere and a very sort of communal atmosphere. It felt rather homely, at the time. And I think like DDT now, like they're probably bigger than they've ever been. And like, so they, but they still sort of managed to sort of counterbalance that, this kind of like, homely communal feel with something that's, you know, actually quite well put together on a production end. I think like you credit that to Sanshiro Takagi, as a businessman. An odd anecdote about Sanshiro Takagi was that he was in a book a couple of years ago, listed as one of the people, like one of the sort of geniuses that was going to lead Japan into an economic revival. It was like him and a bunch of like these other businessmen. And I remember seeing this. This was like, I think it was like December 2015 or so that this book came out, because I saw Takagi retweeting this and reading about that. Right at the same time as DDT's end of year party, where a video went viral of him setting his pubic hair on fire and shouting "Jungle fire, jungle fire," those two things are that man and that promotion in a nutshell, I feel.
Wow, what messaging? That's something else. As you talk about that communal atmosphere that DDT has fostered. And I think that's a large part of what you can attribute to the success of this promotion, is having that kind of atmosphere as they have grown and you see them doing Sumo Hall once a year. I mean, how has that, have they done a successful job in maintaining that atmosphere that a lot of promotions, it's trying to drive the fan at home to actually come to the venue and buy a ticket that DDT's had success in doing?
Yeah, but I mean, I think like it's things like this. I think like it's things like the Apartment Pro Wrestling, and it's things like them. They just did, you know, you might be aware they just did a show on a train.
Yes.
It's the stupid shit. Like it's doing the campsites. It's doing like the culture festivals and things like that. That keep that going. And, DDT is also like, it's really an umbrella for a lot of smaller, more bizarre promotions as well. So like, because they then put their guys into, you know, not just DDT, but like doing things for like Gambare and Basara and things. So it's a way that like they can keep DDT as this perhaps a little more quote unquote professional, outfit, while still having their guys be more accessible, I think, than in most other promotions anyway.
So specific to this show, when did you just hear about this apartment idea? Was this something that just out of nowhere was released on DVD? Was there any kind of a build up to this ahead of time? I mean, take us back to August of 2011 and the release of this this idea and how it was hatched.
Yeah, so I was at the beer fights that year, and like they were doing, that's when they announced it. They said, like, we're doing this thing. We've got this abandoned apartment, this derelict apartment that's being knocked down, and so we're going to run a show there. And the idea was, I think it was like 9 groups or like 9 sets of people. So you had like that crowd of like what, 20 people throwing those cameras around. And the idea was that if you went, because beer fights run Monday to Friday, so like if you went to all 5 shows, then you could enter into a raffle, and then the winners of that raffle would be able to go and see that show. So
that's the whole entourage. They're all contest winners.
That's the whole entourage, including the third grade schoolgirl that's there.
Yeah.
Which
was a little weird.
It's so here's this girl that has to go and see everything from the porn all over the walls of, I think it was Ken Oker's apartment, and him sitting there jacking off, to seeing, to seeing Dan Shokodino, with Fukuda in bed, and then afterwards, anally violating Michael Nakazawa with, I think it was the pipe from a washing machine or something.
Apparently.
At some point. But I mean, so it goes through all of that, but the most egregious thing is when they get to the last opponent where the Brahmin brothers are, and there's that yelling exchange between the Brahmins and Ibushi and the landlords of this apartment. And Brahmin Shu points out this girl. They show her on camera, and then he says I can't remember the exact thing he said. He said what the hell are you doing here on your school holiday? And then says to her, watch out for this guy, in reference to his twin brother, Brahmin K. Watch out for this guy. He's a pedophile.
Oh my God. See, I could not watch this with any kind of translation here. There are no subtitles on this DVD. I really wish I could have just quickly flown over to Japan and sat down and watched this with you. You probably could have explained more to me.
Yeah, I don't know if you dipped into the DVD extras on that, because the DVD extra is Takagi showing up to thank the people after the show. So they've stopped filming or whatever. Takagi comes in just to say hello to these contest winners, and he gets out of the car and he sees the girl with her mum. And he's mortified. He's just going, oh, I had
we
no
We might be facing
idea.
A lawsuit is probably
I'm
what he was
so
thinking.
So sorry.
Oh my God. This is, let's talk a bit about in 2011, where Kota Ibushi was in his career. This is one of the more unique guys that has emerged out of the industry, period, I would say, in the last 10 years of it. I mean, a very unique mindset when it comes to professional wrestling, and it seems like DDT and Kota Ibushi was a perfect marriage.
Yeah, I mean, he'd come up in DDT, and this was when DDT were playing very nicely with New Japan. So he was doing, he'd done Best of the Super Juniors at that point. I can't remember whether he'd had the junior heavyweight belt at that point or not. I think he got it not too long afterwards. So he was, he was very much in the ascendancy, at that time. And then, that was the sort of path that put him onto doing the whole two contract thing, where he was contracted to DDT and New Japan at the same time. And then, of course, after that completely burned him out. So now he's very much his own man, I think. He probably enjoys being such. He's absolutely a very unique individual. I talked to him back in January, because I was doing a thing for, you have to cut it out. I can't remember. What's the name of the magazine? Fighting Spirit magazine. There you go.
Yes.
So I talked to him for Fighting Spirit magazine then, and when I spoke to him, he was kind of a little bit stilted, a little bit awkward. I think partly, that was my fault, because I was interviewing him in my second language or whatever. I think you have to know him, and then his zany ideas of let's wrestle in a triangular ring, all sort of come out. Because Kenny Omega told me this as well. The reason why Kenny Omega has really good Japanese is that when those two were teaming together, and this was about 2011, I don't know why, probably Kenny was just not in the country at the time. That's why he wasn't on those shows. I know he was at the beer fight shows, but so this was when Kenny and Kota were teaming, And so they would always be on, like, on Samurai TV. They would have the, like, these TV appearances. But, like, Kota is just, like, this really quiet and kind of shy dude. So, like, they'd be on Japanese TV and fielding questions. And Ibushi would say, like, jack shit. And, like, Kenny Omega would have to go, and start talking, you know? And that kind of pressured him to get better at Japanese. So I think, like, Ibushi owes... it's an aspect of his character is owed to Kenny Omega's success, I think.
Watching this, I mean, it's kind of weird, but what did you think of, like, Kota Ibushi's performance? Because this was essentially 70 minutes of Kota Ibushi doing elements of professional wrestling, doing elements of acting, and I mean, what did you think of this just presentation, and specifically Kota Ibushi being the kind of your main character in a video game going through levels?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't, to be fair, I don't think it was that demanding.
No, not, I don't even mean like the physicality and such as just more just like he's the one carrying this thing. I mean, it's this character that if you're not engaged in Kota Ibushi after 20 minutes, it's like you got a lot of time here that this guy has to, he has to be the thread between all of this.
Right, yeah. I think, like, Ibushi kind of plays a good straight man. I think, like, if you watch a lot of sort of DDT comedy, like, he's the straight guy. You always have, like, the people doing pratfalls around him, and then he's the guy that sort of, you know, looks at them sort of quizzically in the face and then sort of cold clocks them. And, like, that is his thing. And I think, like, you see that all the way through, which is why, like, it's a good structure, you know, because he's going from, like, thing to thing. And then you have, like, Michael Nakazawa is, like, a funny guy in himself. Like, he's a very good foil. Dancho Cattino is tremendously, Dino is tremendous, whether you have distaste for his character or not.
Can you quickly summarize Dino for those that are not familiar? Because he's a very popular figure in DDT. And for those that watch this, I mean, he's probably one of the more memorable. I mean, Room 301 has a new meaning now for wrestling fans.
Dino is... I mean, like, Dino, I guess, like, the thing is there's such a wonderful story to be told about Dino, and that's waiting for someone to come along. And, I'm sure, like, that will happen at some point. Because, like, Dino's, like, this fascinating guy that the people would only know in the mainstream because he was the other guy in that Joey Ryan video. You know, and, like, but... he came up with doing that spot, you know, and like, so he's, I mean, like, it's kind of like the idea of the sort of Mexican exotico, like turned up to a million.
Sure.
Of, this very sexually aggressive, gay man, that if you go to a DDT live show before, Dancho Cattino comes out, there's an announcement that goes out that says, Dancho Cattino is about to make his entrance. Dancho Cattino is a very aggressive gay man. And if you're a male, he may try to kiss and grope you. And I think the first time I saw Dino, which I think like is most people's automatic first sort of responses to Dino, is like this instant, you know, that it's very exploitative and very crass and hugely unpleasant, I think. But the more you see of him, and the more you see that, like, the crowd's reaction to him as well, it's very strange, like, in our sort of Western mindset to see, and our Western wrestling mindset. Like, it's amazing. I, like, went straight away and, like, sent him a tweet saying, you need to prepare yourself for Dancho Cattino. Because, like, I listened to, like, you guys talking about Rico, like, last week.
Yep.
And so it's very strange to, A, have that character be very, accentuated, and B, have it be a baby face as well.
Sure.
Is really odd. So it's like kind of thing. Oh, this is really gross, but like everybody kind of loves him for that. And it's more that, you know, I mean, you can look at it in a positive sense of his being who he is and people kind of accept him for that. And like, I think that's interesting. I think like it's very easy for, especially guys like us, to sort of overanalyze Adino. And I suspect if you're talking to him, he's not quite as precious as all that, when it comes to his philosophy on it. But I think like it is a more positive character than, first appears. And, Dino himself is a very sharp guy. You know, I think like you see beyond the sort of the instant, stuff about his character, and like he's very sort of quick on his feet, in terms of a comedian, and he's a better wrestler than as first appears as well. You know, he had a really good match with, Shuji Ishikawa last year. But I think as well, he's this amazing sort of, you know, he's very good at improv and comedy. Although like there was a very easy, erection joke, in when they get to 301. It doesn't quite translate, but, you know, the apartment people were talking about, oh, but you know, we've erected this building for people to live in. And no, I am erect. That's why I was, no, but, yeah. So, where were we? What? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, Dino. last thing on Dino. I mean, I try and imagine a character like this in North America, and I just don't think it would, like, any promotion would go with this style of character, especially a WWE, for instance. What do you think is the big difference between, like, is there any kind of a backlash to this character in Japan, or is it accepted for what it is, and DDT is kind of in its own world that you're not going to get, like, I would see if the WWE attempted something like this, even in the Attitude Era, I feel it would have gotten lots of criticism from outside outlets. I mean, that doesn't seem to be the case, but correct me if I'm wrong, in Japan. Yeah.
No, I mean, like, you don't get the criticism of it, but at the same point, yeah, no, it couldn't work at all in the West. It could only absolutely work in Japan, because Japan has its, has a very strange, approach to sexuality, and a very strange approach to sexuality in the media, especially. And that is a whole discussion that would take a bunch of podcasts, to talk about. So
we'll have to do the Dan Shucko Dino breakdown at a later date. It is interesting.
The guy needs a documentary on him. Like, you know, he's this awesome figure that I think, like, now, like, it's almost like that character is almost like it gets better and better, like the older he is, because like I love this guy, this idea, certainly the idea of a documentary on him gets better and better as like he's now past 40, and like he's always been sort of happy with his lot doing what he does in the spot he's in the position he's in. And I love the idea of like Dan Shucko Dino still doing this when he's like 65 and just like having a harem of like young men with him or something. Like I think like that's this amazing, like I've got this vision of Dan Shucko Dino as the like this amazing Lothario like figure. But I think to like sexuality in Japanese wrestling, like it benefits by not being Western wrestling. Because like you said with WWE, if you look at like WWE compared to, I don't know, like New Japan, because like wrestling's broadly presented as a sport, it doesn't really matter. Like if someone's gay, like if Tetsuya Naito was gay, like it wouldn't change who Tetsuya Naito is. But if Seth Rollins was gay, then it would completely change how he was presented on TV, because, you know, I couldn't imagine WWE not saying, oh, we can't not do something with this.
At a time, I think true, but I think especially with Darren Young, that they didn't want to go in that direction. And I don't know how different
it would be perceived today as even 5 years ago if you were to have someone come out at the highest level of a Seth Rollins level, and the WWE would do anything with that.
Yeah, perhaps, but I couldn't like think that they would just go, oh, we've got reality shows. He could, like, you know, we're gonna like make our male total divas, and like it's gonna be Seth and his like live-in partner or whatever. You know,
I'm sure they'd see opportunities. I guess I'm just saying, yeah. I wouldn't see them going with like kind of trying to portray him differently on television as like some stereotypical role or changing it.
Oh no, yeah, right.
Okay, but we're maybe on different pages. I would definitely see them seeing the marketing opportunities of having a star on their roster that is openly gay, and that they would see that as a benefit.
Yeah, I'm not saying like they would do it in a particularly mean-spirited way, but I think like they, you know, because the WWE philosophy is to sell like an ongoing soap opera or whatever, that they would probably be like, oh, you know, we've got, if wrestler X's wife appears on TV every now and then yeah, we're going to do something with Seth Rollins' his boyfriend or whatever. But yeah, I think like it does help, and you know, in Japan that you have like that it's more sort of separate. And then when you have a character like Dan Shokudino very overtly, or even, I mean, not to say that it is that character, but like something like Hiromu Takahashi, like using like very sort of kind of pushing certain buttons in his promos, that they're able to do that, and it's less, it draws less attention, or the attention that it draws is more accepting, I think.
Well, before we wrap this up, maybe my favorite room was 403 with Tsuyoshi Kikuchi and his makeshift vegetable fruit garden that he had. How did you feel Kikuchi wove himself into this? Because I thought he was hilarious in this.
Tsuyoshi Kikuchi was like, yeah. I mean, like, he's this guy that's been around for decades. Like, was like this old Japan guy, was trained by Jumbo Tsuruta. Like, you know, he was like all Asian tag champion with Kobashi. He was like junior tag champion with Kanemaru. And yeah, he had like that DDT run when he was slowing down, and he was just amazing, you know, and you could say like the bit where like Ibushi just had to walk off into the closet because he was like busting gut laughing about it. He's tremendous.
He was so into this, and I just loved it. And you build up to like the watermelon spot. I mean, I just thought this one, I thought of the different rooms, this one, I may have gone so far as, for it to be my favorite, though I thought the Brahmin twins, who I had not seen before this show, I thought they were great too in that room. I mean, that seemed to be the most, ambitious in terms of the spots they laid out. I mean, they were killing each other in this.
They were, yeah. I think like I'm going to challenge the most ambitious spot. I don't know, of all the things that they did in that thing, the fact that they chose not to work the doctor giving Michael Nakazawa an injection was the weirdest to me.
You know, like, right.
So at the end, he's possessed, and the doctor's like, you know, he gets possessed by the spirit of the mansion, you know, the spirit of the apartment building. And then he said, you know, I will beat you, and if I beat you, then you have to bring everybody back, and they can all live here forever, or whatever. So he gets beaten, and then the doctor's like, we have to get this spirit out of Michael Nakazawa, like, prepare, like, the hypodermic syringe, or whatever. Like, covers him up, like, does the thing, and you're like, okay, so he just, yeah, but whatever. And then, like, Michael Nakazawa's like, doctor, I'm bleeding.
Yeah.
You actually stuck him with this syringe.
It was very bizarre. Like, exactly. You get the cutaway where you just think they're working the syringe shot, and then apparently they fucking put a needle in this guy.
Right. It's like the whole levels of Goldberg punching out limousines. And
yeah, that's a real good comparison. I assume Michael Nakazawa was okay after this. He didn't get, like, hepatitis or anything?
Yeah, I think Michael Nakazawa is alive and well, and I think he moved to Singapore. Like, he runs some business there or something, no? Yeah.
Well, this was something that the catalog of my wrestling mind needed to see. What did you think this was a success? This venture by DDT with the with their apartment release.
I don't know. It depends how you quantify success. I think financially, no. Like, they probably sold a few DVDs and now it's on DDT Universe or whatever. But you know, I think it's you know, like I said before, it's all brand building, and that sounds disgusting. But I mean, it's I think, like I said, that they're very conscious of balancing. We're gonna do these big shows, but we want to connect with the people on a sort of more human basis, and also give creative freedom to their talent in a way that no other promotion does. And I think, like, that it speaks to that open mindset of, if you've got an idea, you can pitch it there, and they probably do it, you know. Which is wonderful. We're coming up, I think, next month, Sanshiro Takagi will, wrestle Minoru Suzuki, in the Tokyo Dome in front of zero people. So that's the level of thought. They've got the Tokyo Dome for an empty arena match.
Wow. That sounds it's like a tribute to, when, WCW or NWA ran the New Orleans Superdome that year in 89, and they didn't advertise it on TV ahead of time, so no one showed up for Flair and Steamboat. Well, Chris, we couldn't have done this review without you. I want to thank you very much, A, for the DVD, B, for coming on. It's always great to chat with you. There is no way I could have had a deeper discussion about this apartment show and diving into Japanese and Western cultures and how they collide on professional wrestling characters than with you as our companion here on Review Away. The floor is yours. I don't know what you are working on a book. I know. What else is going on in the world of Chris Charlton?
Oh God, I'm working on stuff. Yeah, no, I'm working on quite a bit of stuff, and like it's sort of wrestling related and Japan related, and there's some stuff that I'm not allowed to talk about, and like there's some stuff.
I love it. Cryptic.
Yeah, there's some stuff I don't know whether I'm about to talk about, so I probably won't. The book is gonna be, it's Japanese wrestling stuff, but it's a lot more in depth than I think like the last one was. And, you know, it's going to, because of that and because of just the limited amount of time, it's going to be at least a year, I think, on the pace that we're going to get it anywhere near finished. So, I'm not being secretive about it. It's just that if I talked about it now, then people would forget about it by the time it's time to ask them.
No,
for money.
Make people wait. So, make people guess. It's all that's building.
That's exactly right. So, yeah.
Well, I'm going to promote for you Lion's Pride, the turbulent history of New Japan Pro Wrestling. I think for anyone that has gotten into New Japan over the last number of years, this is a must read. You know, critical praise for the book, for one Chris Charlton and his work. So I highly, highly recommend checking out that book. You can get it on Amazon. I assume bookstores, but there's very few of those left in Canada. I don't know what the state of bookstores is wherever you are, listener at home.
I don't think you can get it in Amazon, but if you want it in bookstores, you have to find it used, because it costs ridiculous amounts to put your books in retail. That's probably why there's not any retail bookstores left. It's too fucking expensive. But,
well, that's another podcast there. But you can also follow him at ReasonJP. If you're ever watching a New Japan show and wondering, what's that guy saying? Chris probably has it translated, and it is a corner of the market that he has completely monopolized. Brilliant.
Yeah, it's smart.
Brilliant Twitter feed.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Chris, as always. It's great to chat with you.
Jeez. We'll be right back.
So thank you to Chris for joining us. You can, of course, follow him at ReasonJP on Twitter and giving us a lot of education on DDT, one of the more unique promotions anywhere in the world, I would say.
Mm.
All right, we have a lot of feedback to get to, so let us start off on the message board with Dwayne from Ireland. Not safe for work, you said. I didn't feel safe watching this stuff in my own home. I can honestly say I've never seen anything like it before. When Ibushi walked into the room full of grapefruits, I fully expected a choppy choppy your pee-pee moment coming. I hope he was paid well for this. Selling being hit by an egg like a chair shot, squashing fruit on a man's head to win a match, though I did like the chili sauce spot, assuming it was chili and not ketchup. That shit would really sting. Best match, Ibushi versus the Brahmins, and says bizarre, ridiculous, uncomfortable. I cannot wait to hear your review of this.
We got a Garrett from Hamburg. And I love that this weird apartment match somehow made it all the way to Germany. Like, it's viewed worldwide and talked about years later.
It's a phenomenon.
All right, we got a Garrett who says, holy hell, what did I just watch? This was disturbing and entertaining at the same time. Sometimes I wonder who the crazy person is, the one who creates stuff like that or the one who actually watches it. I watched it and I don't think I wasted time. 5 out of 10 horny Japanese wrestlers.
Okay, we go to Hacksaw Jim Powers. Where to start? Are the two men at the beginning supposed to be the Joe Silva and Sean Shelby of this operation?
Sorry, it's from Alan Jones, actually.
Oh, sorry. I just – never mind. From Alan Jones. Things started off relatively tame with the sexually charged atmosphere that was rampant throughout. But then things went into an extra gear with the introduction of fireworks, sexual molestation, and excretion of green goo. The lack of context certainly added to the disturbing nature of it all, presuming this is why Wei has been trying to learn Japanese recently.
No.
I'm also really amazed there was no balcony dive to a swimming pool spot. What on earth compelled Ibushi to sign up for this? Match of the afternoon would have to go to the main event by default, but overall a very scarring experience. Listen, Ibushi, it would not surprise me if he was a big part of the creation of this.
Yeah,
I don't think this guy was put into this kicking and screaming, believe me.
Absolutely. We go to Danny, who says, I have seen some of the other wacky gimmick matches DDT does, like the campsite matches, which are all fantastic. Because of the open space, the cameramen can get better angles and more background things to bump off from. I really want to see that. Kenny Omega and Generico are part of those,
yes,
too, right? I'm glad I watched the apartment match, even though for me, after two rooms, I thought it peaked. But then room 301 happened, and I busted out laughing.
That was right before the peak.
I wonder if they had a director to tell them Kota is making his way there so they can get in character and make noise. This match would be perfect for a Colt Cabana $5 wrestling event Mania weekend. 6, look, Kevin Nash failed the distraction roll-ups out of 10. Was that what he said?
I didn't hear that.
I didn't hear that either.
Next up, we go, this was really fun to watch. Ibushi played this perfectly, like a guy who was hired to do a job and was going to do it no matter what. He should never be allowed near fireworks, though. I thought that the apartment gardener guy was an incredibly sympathetic babyface. He seemed more than happy to share his harvest, this being Kikuchi, and then got attacked while wearing a blindfold. The guy that Ibushi saved from the closet going on to kidnap the doctor was a swerve executed orders of magnitude better than any Russo's ever booked. I don't know whether those little girls that were there know that it's a work or not, but they were probably very confused nonetheless.
Vince Russo booking DDT may be the perfect combination for somebody of the creative abilities of Vince Russo. I think he'd have a great time.
I think DDT is a testament that you can get stupid shit over, which is more of a negative against Russo that he couldn't.
Maybe. Our next piece of feedback. Haven't watched any DDT in a while until early in the year when they had a samurai six-man tag with guys like Muto, Akiyama, Sakamoto, and of course Ibushi. I know how out of the box they can think, and this was no different. This was so fun and glad I watched this alone. DDT knows who they are and they own it well. They don't do anything silly and pass it off as serious. It is what it is. Kota Ibushi is such a free spirit, the wackier the better for him. Also, it was nice seeing Tsuyoshi Kikuchi.
Next from Christian, Kota Ibushi has won the New Japan Cup, was in talks of signing with WWE, has main evented for the IWGP title, and was even keyed at the start as the 61st junior heavyweight champion. Cut to a few rooms in where two men are selling being hit by water, and Ibushi breaks things up with shooting fireworks at them. One of the many reasons wrestling is a weird and beautiful sport. This was just incredibly odd, and I really enjoyed it. It may sound weird as well, but I thought this whole thing was booked well. We didn't see any real matches until the second to last match. I would have liked subtitles so I knew what was happening and being said. I mean, I'm not sure if it was a heel turn by his tag partner or at the end, or if he was just super pissed that Ibushi shot him with fireworks earlier. Although I think he was brainwashed or something, as he was back to normal after the match. Anyways, really can't hate on this, so giving it 8 easily breakable doors out of 10. That was my favorite recap of this, trying to make sense of it. Mm.
Alexander from Portland. I decided to watch this concurrently with Monday Night Raw. When the Raw Cruiserweight tag match came on, I decided to skip that in favor of the guys throwing eggs at Ibushi. Watching this just made me ecstatic that Ibushi didn't sign with the rest of the Cruiserweights. While he may have been the most over person in the division, bad writing could nullify that so easily. From what little knowledge I have of DDT, you don't question why things happen, you just go with them. I have no idea why Kota Ibushi had to endure these trials, or even how they were sanctioned, but overthinking this match does no favors. I'm insanely curious if Dave Meltzer has watched this and what his thoughts are. I was wildly entertained all throughout. The match had a proper amount of seriousness to offset the comedy. It was as funny as Wyatt and Orton's matches are awful. 8 mini watermelons out of 10.
Maybe this could be a future TJP idea. The video game character really over.
Sure.
A real life gimmick match. From Lay, I fast forwarded about 25 minutes into the first link. He got to room 301. Kota Ibushi is my all-time favorite wrestler, and I'm glad I saw him being a part of this masterpiece. He is even higher above the rest of my list of all-time favorite wrestlers. Thanks for letting me know about this and providing links. This made me think of how Ibushi would have been on the main roster for the WWE.
We go to Bill from Illinois. Where to even begin with this glorious show? I thought the most ridiculous match I had ever seen was the Big Japan Pro Poseidon Adventure match from last year, but Kota Ibushi's harrowing retelling of the Game of Death easily tops it. Ah, that's right, of course. I'm sure influenced from that as well. Each room on each floor was a hilarious build-up where you never knew exactly what you were going to get, from sexual assault to Sukawari, the watermelon game.
Oh, okay.
This show has it all and is a fantastic example of DDT's off-the-wall and super experimental take on pro wrestling. Biggest pop of the show was Kota Ibushi tiring on Michael Nakazawa and Ken Oka fighting and just deciding to launch Roman candles at them. 9 Nakazawas through the wall out of 10.
Terry writes in from Mid-Wales. What did I just watch? Amazing. Bonkers. Chaotic. I must watch more DDT. This can't be rated like a normal wrestling event. Well, no shit. But it's off the charts for bizarre yet endearing fun. The old fella in room 403, who everyone feels bad for Kikuchi, just wanted to tend to his vegetables, was the star of the show, and it was nice to see Kota put him over. I want to see a documentary about this match, how it was put together, the logistics, what genius thought of it, and so on. Lovely nods to WWF's 2000 hardcore matches, with the sight of two wrestlers performing moves in crazy and environments. More of this, please. 12 Ibushi no fucks given fireworks out of 10.
Mr. Senior. Kota Ibushi's apartment complex wrestling is bananas. Bananas by the bunches. All I can say is sequel, or better yet, franchise. It could be wrestling's version of The Fast and the Furious. Add a little production value, as there is essentially none currently, and don't do it all in one shot. This could be a feature-length film. I'm even picturing a video game a la the Street Fighter series or perhaps the Def Jam fighting games. How incredible would it be to die hard your way up a building, fighting outlandish characters until your inevitable boss fight on the roof? Fireworks shooting minigame? Yes, please. My only critique is it could have had a little less sodomy, but what you gonna do?
Chris from Melbourne. Okay, I'm just going to say it. That was batshit insane. I'm glad I took your advice and chose to watch this when everyone else was out. To be honest, I didn't know much about DDT before, other than I heard they have a hardcore championship with a more extreme 24/7 rule. I feel like I not only need to clear my browser history after this, but buy a whole new computer. I won't be going back to DDT anytime soon. Enjoyable, yes, but just not my cup of tea. Well, there's some honesty.
Finally,
for everybody.
Finally, Bax from Bangor, Maine. Wow, just wow. This is why Review Away is the best wrestling podcast, because I get introduced to some of the most crazy, campy shit that I would have never found on my own. All the opponents behind the mystery doors had me laughing out loud, from the farmer to the twins that were pelting Kota with eggs 1 second and then giving him a shower to The couple that blatantly raped his partner and the matches themselves were good too. Unlike most of the people on this thread, I did not take your NSFW warning seriously and was almost caught watching this in my break room as my manager walked in. Lesson learned. All in all, an excellent show. With my only complaint being there were no subtitles. I'm super excited to hear the review, and I have a feeling this will surpass the Viagra on a Pole review as my new favorite.
Well, folks, thank you for all of the feedback to this event. It seemed to be a big hit with people as we round out our review of DDT, which I'm sure we will do more of down the road. But a fun event to check out. Definitely a different change of pace.
Yes, definitely.
So... we are going to end the show. We will be back on Friday, June the 2nd with our next review. And Mr. Ting, we are going to be going to the fun year that was 1998.
I'm trying to remember. I was in grade 8.
We were both in grade 8.
Yep.
Weeks away from graduation.
Ah, that's right. Yes. About to enter high school.
Oh, boy.
Some solid years. What was a hit at the time? What wasn't a hit? I mean, I'm assuming Chumbawamba was big at the time.
Are you Sugar Ray? Who wants to know? Who wants to know?
What song is that?
No, it's Are You Jimmy Ray by...
Yes.
Yeah.
The Sugar Ray was also really popular.
Sugar Ray was also around that time.
Yeah, yeah,
put all my Rays together.
Yes.
Bully Ray or Bubba Ray was running wild in ECW.
So we'll be traveling back to 1998 and, of course, the month of June, which can only mean one of two things, and we are choosing the second thing.
Yes. Wei was so captivated by the tagline, baseball, hot dogs, and apple pie, tradition bites, the new American pastime. WCW and NWO present the Great American Bash.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to be chatting about that event, which featured...
Quite the card.
This was headline. This is all you need to know about fucking WCW 1998. The main event is a singles match between the two tag champions for the tag titles. Sting versus the Giant, with the winner becoming the tag champions.
Oh, God. Well, that aside, I mean, quite the undercard as well. Do you want to list some of those up?
We've got the finals, or the final match of the Best of Seven series involving Booker T and Chris Benoit, where the winner would get... a television title shot.
Wow, what a prize.
Bill Goldberg versus Conan,
mm-hmm.
as he would go on looking to become, I believe this was 100-0 on this show.
Oh.
No spoilers.
Wow.
And we also got Juventud Guerrera against Reese, Chris Jericho and Dean Malenko, Hulk Hogan and Bret Hart teaming against Randy Savage and Roddy Piper.
Eddie Guerrero versus Chavo.
Yes. This was at a time when WCW was starting to disintegrate, yet was still on fire. So great to watch. Great to watch something right before the bomb goes off, which is probably what June 1998 can be classified as in the history of WCW. So that is coming up in 2 weeks. Great American Bash 1998, available on the WWE Network or wherever fine streams are found. So that is going to bring us to an end, and taking us out is this classic song from 1998. What do you want to do next time?
Oh, yeah.
What do you feel like? Is there a promotion of choice?
Yeah, actually, I want to watch some Stardom.
But, okay.
I don't know. Is it two Japanese promotions? Is that too much in a row?
I don't care. let's see if they have a whole event we could watch. What about this? Their January 3rd show from this year. The whole thing's there.
Yeah, okay. Does it have, like, some of the new,
Oh, it's even subtitled. Chinese. I don't know who's on it. I'm sure most of the...
You want to look up the card?
Got Kerry Hojo and Yoshirai in a tag match. Mm-hmm. Nixon Newell, she's... Mayu Iwatani, that's one of their big stars, too. I mean, this
is... Is it too dry for review? Might be a little dry.
Maybe.
Okay, what else? Let's pick something else. What is it? Would be June.
Oh, is that when... When's our next one? June 2nd.
Yeah. Is there June... WCW?
Could do a King of the Ring or a Great American Bash?
We haven't done WCW in a while.
Let's see which
or
ones.
Or ECW.
Let's avoid 2000 because of Brian and Nate. And I think we've done Great American Bash 2000, if I'm not mistaken. God, I want to say, like, all of these we haven't done.
Okay. Well, is there anything happening in 2 weeks that's kind of more interesting in wrestling?
Short answer would be no. 91 is like one of the legendary shitty WCW shows.
No, I don't know if I can.
WCW doesn't seem to float your interest here.
I'd rather do like maybe a good one.
You can pick a good one. Yeah. We can go like to their peak period here in 97. Like
anything around there? What are those called?
96. Let me just double check. I think we did 96. Because that would have been. That was like Rey Mysterio's debut, and I'm pretty sure we did it. We did 96.
Yeah.
And 1990, 99, okay. And 89.
Maybe
so,
like 97 or 8. Let's see those.
97 had Savage and DDP, mm-hmm. Kevin Green and Steve McMichael, Akira Hokuto, mm-hmm. The Ultimate Dragon and Psychosis, mm-hmm. And then 98, this was when we're, the Booker T. Benoit series, Goldberg against Conan,
the final.
Jericho Malenko,
Sting and the Giant.
God, look at these undercards, and then you just see the stark turn. Baseball, hot dogs, and apple pie. Tradition bites. The new American pastime.
What did... oh, he won the number one contenders. That best of seven was just for a number one contenders?
Yeah, that was it, to get a TV title match.
Chavo versus Eddie. I mean, Jericho Dean. That's not bad. It's pretty good.
Compared to this one, does this look any better? They're... Give him a warm, nice hug on Father's Day. These suck, dude. How do you come up with this shit? Give him a nice, warm hug. It's just so fucking bad. Baseball, hot dogs, and apple pie. Tradition bites.
Is this okay?
Yeah, 98's good. Let's do it.
Are these matches too long?
I don't care. It's pay-per-view.